This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast that follows our journey of investing. Whether you're an absolute beginner or approaching Warren Buffett status, our aim is to help break down your barriers from beginning to dividend. My name is Bryce, and as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How's it going?
I'm very good, Bryce. Very pumped for this episode. We are speaking about an area of the stock market that has captured our attention and our imagination, fintech.
Fintech. That's right. We've got an expert on the line, and we've got a topic that we're ready to get stuck into in celebration of ETF Securities' recent fintech ETF, which we'll touch on in a bit. But look, we shouldn't leave him hanging. We're absolutely pumped to have Chris Titley from Morgans Financial joining us on the show. Chris, welcome.
Thanks, Bryce and Alec, or Ren. I don't know. Which one do I call you?
Whichever one you want. Maybe change it up throughout.
Mate, big fan of the series, particularly the ex-cricketers that have come on, Eddie Cowan and Usman Khawaja. I can safely say that I'm not as good a bat as they were, but certainly an amateur cricketer in my time.
Great to have them on the show as well, and I can also say that I am nowhere near as good as the bat was going to say.
we play a game of cricket once a year with all of our mates, and I can guarantee that Bryce isn't as good a batsman as some of those boys.
So, Chris, you're a stockbroker at Morgans Financial, but you have a real passion for emerging fintechs, digital banks, payments companies, you know, all those subsectors of fintech. And so today we've got you on to really help us have a discussion at that sort of high level around what's going on in the space, a bit of a chat around digital payments and some of the trends and companies that are emerging, some of the big acquisitions that are going on. As I said, it's all in celebration for ETF Securities, fintech ETF. They've released a new ETF tracking the global fintech industry with significant exposure to blockchain technology, decentralized finance, digital payments and peer-to-peer lending. It's called ETFS Fintech and Blockchain ETF, and the exchange code is FTEC. And we're going to be joined by Kanish later in this episode to talk about that specifically. But Chris, let's start at the top. There's a lot of sort of buzzwords when it comes to fintech. There's a few definitions that we need to get our head around. So let's set the scene. But can you explain it like Ren and I are five? Because there's a few tricky things in here. And so let's start at the top. How do you define fintech?
Fintech, well, for a five-year-old, it's anything to do, any technology to do with money. And I'm going to sort of talk it in layman's terms. Do you guys know the TV show Bluey?
We don't.
I can't say we do.
it's a pretty well-known TV show for kids based out of Brisbane, but they've done enormously well. They sold their rights to Disney, so it's a bit of a global phenomenon. But they, yeah, five-year-old language, if I want to use it, dollar bucks. So anything to do with dollar bucks and technology.
Okay, nice. Okay.
So if fintech is dollar bucks, digital technology, then what are digital banks? And I guess how are they different to the regular banks that we've grown up with?
Well, if you think about a piggy bank being a physical bank and stores dollar bucks, then a digital bank is a bank which is a piggy bank in your phone. So it's a digital bank. It is a bank that does not have any branches.
Interesting. Okay. And then let's go a bit further. What is blockchain? Tough to explain to a five-year-old.
That's fine for a five-year-old. okay, for a five-year-old's language. How about an ongoing story that never ends and you can't cheat? How about that?
Okay.
Wow, okay.
And then finally, what is decentralized finance?
For a five-year-old.
Maybe explain like I'm 10.
Yeah.
Okay. Decentralized finance is really a financial system that's based and used on blockchain rather than traditional methods as a bank. So, you know, I send you money, it's done through an institution right now, but decentralized finance has used the blockchain, which at the moment there's sort of non-government-based style platforms, but you know, maybe in the future there's government-regulated finance, which would probably be decentralized finance potentially.
Chris, there are several fintech sub-thematics that are, you know, super interesting, causing a lot of disruption to traditional business models, including, as you've just mentioned, decentralized finance, there's digital payments, peer-to-peer lending, and there's plenty also going on in when it comes to data providers and financial enterprise solutions. But I think sort of top of mind for a lot of people is digital payments and what's going on there. Huge industry expected to hit $6.6 trillion in value by the end of this year, and it's growing at 22% year on year. So what are some of the key trends that we're seeing in this space that's driving that growth?
Well, I think last year through the global health pandemic really sort of identified some new structural changes within payments. I mean, traditionally you'd have people holding cash and transferring cash, and that was actually, you know, probably the most normalized method dating back a decade or so ago. Then you had the introduction of cards and then smartphones on top of that. But last year, I suppose, with some governments saying, a lot of retailers saying, don't touch cash because it's actually carrying germs of other people, people really changed their methods and you saw a huge uptick. So I think the general broad thematic has come from the smartphones. It's certainly come from new methods of payment, particularly in the US, things like Venmo and PayPal, and then here locally, Osco. And then it's also come from the vendors regarding, you know, tap and go and then digital debit cards and large big tech companies like Apple. So I think, you know, there's a big structural change when it comes to payments. And as you mentioned, it's growing rapidly. And then you've also got companies that on the e-com side, which again had a terrific year last year, that are powering things like Stripe and Square, for instance.
Yeah, it is an incredible disruption in the space. You know, we're seeing a war on cash, I guess. Both Visa and the Indian government have separately declared war on cash. You wouldn't think Visa and India would be allies in a war, but there you go. and we are, like, we're living in and feeling this disruption as everyday consumers. You know, our money habits are changing, how we pay for things, where we keep our money, you know, where we spend, where we save, all of that is changing. If you look at it from a company lens, what are some of the big winners in this space in the middle of this disruption?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the answer is probably those companies that have really been technology forward thinkers or even technology first style companies. So it comes to mind. I mean, PayPal is a classic example. That sort of came out of eBay and they saw a need for online payments. And then you've got companies out of the US like Stripe that I mentioned that are probably one of the most valuable fintechs in the world privately that sits at the back end of a lot of payments online. Locally, you've probably got companies that are coming out, the big four banks, like the digital banks, like Ferocia, which is the Up brand, which has, you know, recently merged with Bendigo. But you've got companies like Tyro and CBA. So there's a lot of competition coming at the traditional form of payments. And then you've got the giants, the elephants in the room, you know, Visa and MasterCard, and how they adapt and how they look for partnerships and where they're investing and how they're acquiring businesses to stay on top of things. So it's all panning out, but I think the big winners generally, broadly speaking, have been the global payments companies like PayPal and Stripe. And you're seeing, locally, even someone like Commonwealth Bank that's quite innovative that seems to be on top of things and merging and partnering with various fintechs.
So when there are winners, there must be losers. Are there any that you're seeing that are sort of struggling to keep up with this disruption? You mentioned Visa, MasterCard, CBA. Like, are they truly keeping pace with what's going on, or are they just trying to make acquisitions to keep up?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of using a sporting analogy, a bit of an offense and defense going on with some of these large incumbents. You know, do they get on the front foot and try and create new ways of doing things and mimic the sort of smart, nimble, faster fintechs, or is there defense that protecting their turf by acquiring businesses and getting the competition out of the way and putting them within their stable? So it's a bit of an ongoing battle. But in regards to the losers, I think probably, and this will be spoken from a consumer point of view, is probably the large legacy systems and the banks that just can't keep up to pace with the new system. So, I mean, Apple Pay took a long time for the big four companies or big four banks in Australia to adopt. And then you've got the regional banks that some banks still in Australia don't have OSCO and instant payments. Some still don't have live statements and, push notifications, all the things that consumers are demanding now. Yeah, as you mentioned, Visa and MasterCard, again, probably the card payment side of things you would think is slowing down. But again, there's new and innovative ways. I mean, the emergence of the buy now, pay later phenomena over the last 5 years, broadly speaking, Australia's been a world leader in that sector. That's a sector that banks wouldn't have thought of 5 or 6 years ago, and this whole thing is emerging in front of their eyes.
When we speak about losers and we speak about buy now, pay later, the credit market subsection of the digital payment market has been a phenomenal thing to watch, and Australia has really led the way with Afterpay and Zip and that long tail of buy now, pay laters. I feel like a loser that we have to touch on are the credit card companies. It feels like this disruption has really sort of hit them for six.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think a number of people say change happens a bit slower than people think, but the narrative is that buy now, pay later is a digital innovator or a disruptor to credit cards. And that's argued a lot in the press, because you see the buy now, pay later numbers going up and you see the credit card numbers going down. So you'd assume that is the case. Whether that replaces the credit card market, what I do think is probably played out in the background that not many people talk about is the low interest rate environment that we live in at the moment. So if you're getting charged 20% and you know that the interest rates are at 0.5% or 10 basis points, you're a consumer, you're pretty smart. You're going, I'm getting ripped off you. So you've seen some innovative or quasi-innovative credit cards that come out and say, well, it's now only 10% compared to buy now, pay later that is no interest rate. If interest rates were 7 or 8%, maybe there's a different narrative. But I think in this environment, you are seeing new issuance probably diminishing. But I still think there is probably a longer tail than you think. It's probably an analogy that I use with credit cards is probably like the fixed telephone line. Like, it still survived for many, many years after mobile phones came in. It had a bit of a long tail death, but I think that's probably going to be the case with credit cards, that there's still fixed lines out there. Still people have home lines and business lines, et cetera, but it's nowhere near as popular as it used to be, a decade ago.
I can't remember the last time I used a fixed line, to be honest.
Showing my age here.
It's going to be like when we're older and, kids are watching movies and someone picks up a fixed line and they're just like, what is that? Yeah. Anyway, we're not here to talk about that. So, Chris, there have been a number of sort of big acquisitions in the space. You mentioned Bendigo and NAB, and obviously we can't go past the Afterpay Square. So, what's the trend here? But maybe if you can talk through each of those examples as well, as I'm sure other than the Afterpay Square, the other two might not be as familiar to our audience.
No, yeah, well, I'll start with the less familiar ones, because the story has been spoken about with the Afterpay Square merger. But going back to probably the first biggest one that we saw in the last 6 months or so, dating back probably 9 months or so, was NAB's acquisition of 86400. Now, 86400, if you don't know, is the number of seconds in a day. But they were a digital bank that operated here in Australia solely trying to get consumers to be educated on digital bank and provide a niftier, funkier user interface. They had some decent traction early on. NAB ended up coming in and acquiring that business for north of $200 million, which is a good, probably sound result for the founders of those businesses. But that was the first one that sort of fell by the wayside, and now they've integrated that into UBank. So that's now ongoing at NAB. So the results are sort of yet to come out on the success of that acquisition. But that was one that sort of took people by surprise that a big four bank is buying a quicker digital bank. The second one, again, on that digital bank theme was Bendigo acquiring Ferocia, which is the platform that most people know as UpBank. UpBank sort of was one of the fastest, or is the fastest growing digital bank in the world, based here in Australia, based in South Melbourne. They've sort of gone straight to 400,000, 500,000 users in the last couple of years just by doing again, little banking functions that people don't think banks normally do. You know, improve customer service. I think, you know, it takes 3 or 4 minutes for people to get back to you. You can do all the funky things like Apple Pay and Osco straight off the bat and create savers and manage your money and upcoming bills, et cetera, all the things that people have sort of wanted for years from a bank. So Bendigo acquired that in an all-scrip acquisition, which is the same as Afterpay and Square. So it was about $100 million of Bendigo shares that the founders got in that business, and now they're going to continue the up-brand and move forward. So, yeah, very fascinating to see where some of the regional banks, big banks, and also some of the bigger players like PayPal, Stripe, and Square are playing. But obviously Square's the most well-known one coming in and merging with the Aussie behemoth that is Afterpay, that's sort of number 12 company in Australia.
If we broaden the scope, I guess, from digital payments, we're seeing other innovations from the financial space as technology sort of enables new business models. And one that I believe Westpac pioneered, correct me if I'm wrong, is open banking. Banking as a service. Can you tell us, you know, we've heard software as a service. We start to hear other companies try and use that as a service sort of label for some of their product offerings. But banking as a service, like what is it and what can we learn about the industry from it?
Yeah, well, that's another buzzword that's floating around in fintech. I mean, as a service, generally, if a stock price goes up, people say, what do they do? And they say they make up something and say, oh, it's as a service. Mining as a service.
Hey, Chris, we do podcasting as a service.
True.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, gyms were the classic one, where they're like fitness as a service. You're like, gym membership, that's a FAS model, isn't it? You know, like, what? What are you talking about? $30 a month, it's, you know, a subscription. Yeah, look, I mean, banking as a service, again, is where I suppose the banks can white label, or other people can white label banking technology to really capture loyalty and a brand through. Like Walmart, for instance, launched their bank. So if you think about locally, someone like Woolworths launching a bank, or I don't know, someone, electricity provider, whatever it might be, that thinks they can enter financial services and provide a decent experience. But, you know, probably the most common banking as a service platform or most well known is yet to be launched, but it's sort of soft launched, which is Afterpay's bank, which is using Westpac's back end and infrastructure. So the Afterpay bank, or Money by Afterpay, is about to be imminently launched, which is obviously a trusted brand amongst their users. They've got a lot of users, and now they're looking to enter into savings and spending and other peripheral areas of finance outside of buy now, pay later, which is, again, using Westpac's banking license, because it's not easy to get a banking license. You probably need $100 million of tier one capital to start off with. It's not easy to set up banking infrastructure and systems. So they're using Westpac partnership for that. So, yeah, it's probably a good deal for both of them, but it's yet to be launched. And there was a fair bit of press around whether that was going to be launched because of the merger with Square or not. But, Afterpay reassured investors that it's due imminently to come out. And it'll be interesting to see whether, of their people that have downloaded an Afterpay debit card, whether they convert to a bank or not, or whether they're just happy to stay with CBA or Upbank, for instance.
So, Chris, another buzzword that is obviously floating around in this space is the blockchain. And so we'd love to get your thoughts on the innovations around the blockchain and how do you sort of think that the blockchain is influencing the fintech space at the moment? I know that this ETF by ETF Securities is really designed to help give exposure to blockchain technology. So, yeah, if you could chat to some of the trends that you're seeing in this space.
Yeah, I mean, the most obvious one is cryptocurrency, and whether that ends up inevitably being a normalized common person test cryptocurrency, which, you know, you've seen that the rocket pace of some of these prices, particularly with Bitcoin, which is the most popular one. So, yeah, that's an application which is very exciting. Again, it's probably got its positives and negatives to the common person, but, you know, the exchanges that have been set up around trading cryptocurrency have been insanely popular. Coinbase listed on the US market, I think with a market cap bigger than most of the exchanges, equity exchanges around the world. For instance, like I think it's sort of 4 or 5 times bigger than the ASX here locally. So there's huge demand on the infrastructure side and people, you know, being able to trade currency. But then you've got, you know, the NFT market, which is the non-fungible token market. I'm not too sure whether you've spoken about
yes,
that before.
Yes.
But again, I can't really explain that to a 5-year-old. But for me, that, again, is a digital asset in regards to ownership change. And that is probably a pretty exciting market. You've seen some companies like OpenSea which is seeing huge transactional volumes. So some people calling it the sort of the eBay 2.0, where you can buy and sell NFTs and artworks. And then you've got, for me, something which, again, is probably close to my heart is sporting organisations. You've got companies that are leading the way by creating digital moments within sport, which you can buy and sell. I mean, it sounds silly, but the market is, you know, has seen a huge number of transactions. It's sort of an open menu, I suppose, on where things land with the blockchain. I mean, the applications are coming fast, thick and fast, but yeah, it'd be tricky to kind of see where to make, you know, extraordinary amounts of money early on, because if you go back to the internet and say, look, what could you have invested in the internet back in 1995, you'd probably say, oh, Amazon or eBay, but, you know, those businesses weren't created then. So, you know, it's an entrepreneur that created them and drove those businesses. I mean, you probably could have hacked a few domain names and skimmed a few bucks off McDonald's or something if you owned their domain name back in 96. But, you know, I don't think at this stage, for me, the application use of the blockchain is yet to be seen from what I call a common person test.
If we use the internet analogy, we're in the early days of the internet when it comes to blockchain, and there's, I guess, a lot of hope. There's a lot of venture capital flowing into the space. I was reading an article that this year, 129 startups, blockchain-related startups, were funded, and they together raised $2.6 billion. So, you know, there's a lot of, I guess, hope and aspiration in the space at the moment. If you think about how the bigger end of town, you know, the Squares, the PayPals, the Visas are reacting to blockchain, you know, is there anything that they're all doing, or any way that they're positioning their business for, I guess, the more mainstream adoption of blockchain?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, and I can't speak for the strategies of some of those companies, but at the same time, I think it's like anything, a potential imminent threat or an imminent opportunity, and they really need to assess about testing out the various ways of payments, testing out the various security levels of infrastructure and testing out the ways of doing it. Because, I mean, for an example, at the local level, the ASX are looking to potentially change their chess system, their clearing system, using blockchain technology. And I think it was sort of due to be in around now to be launched, but it's been delayed again. So there's lots of uses, and lots of people are testing things and trying to test things and throwing money at teams to testing things. But again, it's like you just have to wait and see. I think the future is, and some of the best names in the blockchain are yet to be created for me. I think it's hard to kind of pick the winners. There might be one or two that exist now, but you probably do need to invest, and you do need to partner, and you do need to learn about it, because, again, it could be an imminent threat to some of these companies, or at the same time, a massive opportunity.
So, Chris, I guess that begs the question then, as retail investors looking to get access to this space and invest in blockchain, are there any ways in which we can do that?
As it pans out, there'll be lots of different ways to invest via ETFs or through listed equities, again, or through startups that are appearing. You're seeing some of those funding numbers are huge. So there's lots of entrepreneurs out there starting businesses and ideas, again, using the blockchain, which will come to prominence, and they'll, you know, raise Series A, B, C, D rounds and potentially float, et cetera. So, yeah, there'll be plenty of opportunities. I note in the press recently, I think Airtree backed Immutable, a gaming blockchain business based out of Sydney. I don't know too much about that, but it was a big raise. I think they raised over $100 million.
Wow.
And there's a company locally here in Brisbane called SwiftX, which has sort of grown under the radar, I think, to 30-plus people, again, on the exchange side of things when it comes to cryptocurrency. So there's plenty to look out for, and sort of a bit of an open plate in terms of where the investment opportunities are, but certainly there will be ones.
You spend a lot of time looking at fintech, and we should say you're a good follow on LinkedIn. You share a lot of news from the world of Aussie fintech. So if people want to hear more from Chris, jump on LinkedIn and follow him there. If you think generally about the fintech landscape, both here in Australia and globally, what gets you most excited? What are you, you know, most excited? What companies or themes are you most excited to see play out in the coming years?
Yeah, about 5 or 6 years ago, I started following the emerging technology or startup scene here in Australia. And it was really exciting. There was only a couple of funds and certainly not a huge amount of companies that sort of were startups. I think it was a bit of a misconception about, oh, if you're a startup, it's sort of like it's very high risk. And now it's, 5 years later, it's a buzzword. And I think fintech's at that early stage. I think in the next 5 years or so, you'll see people talk a lot more about fintech. There'll be a lot more funds investing in it. A lot more success stories, as we've already seen a couple here in Australia. So I do think anything to do with money, broadly speaking, is, in my view, is fintech, whether it's property or insurance, or whether it's savings or spending, and it relates to the everyday person. So there's the total addressable market is a massive market within this sub-segment. So I'm just excited about this the segment broadly speaking, whether it is payments or DeFi or the different forms of credit or the different forms of way people save or budgeting, etc. And there's exciting opportunities. Again, some of these opportunities haven't been created yet, but I'm really excited to see what can be created with open banking and DeFi and other sub-segments of fintech. So, yeah, no, I can't wait.
It is super exciting, Chris. Plenty going on. We've got decentralized finance, digital payments, peer-to-peer lending, data providers, and financial enterprise solutions. A lot of things to keep up with, but you've done a really good job in helping us to understand it like we're five, which has been which has been good. And we very much appreciate you coming on and sharing your expertise. As I said, a lot going on in that space. So we appreciate your time.
Thanks, Bryce and Alec and Ren.
Thanks, Chris.
And ETF Securities have recently released a new ETF tracking the global fintech industry with significant exposure to blockchain technology, decentralized finance, digital payments, and peer-to-peer lending. All the hot stuff, hot and sexy stuff in fintech at the moment. It's called ETF Securities Fintech and Blockchain ETF. The exchange code is FTEC.
Yeah, that's right. It's a fascinating space, a space that we're all very exposed to. A lot of us have, you know, used these new fintech platforms, the Squares, the PayPals, the Afterpays, the Zips of the world, and a lot of us have invested in them as well. But we can sort of see and feel that this disruption is happening before our very eyes, and it's pretty exciting that there's now a way to just invest in that overall disruption.
So we have Head of Distribution from ETF Securities, Kanish Chugh, here with us. Kanish, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So we're going to just discuss a little bit about the fintech ETF, some of the major holdings, and a little bit of an interesting fact as well. So stay around for that. But let's start at the top. Why create a fintech ETF?
So I guess the reason for creating a fintech ETF, you know, as an ETF manager here in Australia, you know, we were the first to the market in the world for a physical gold ETF. You know, we're often looking at the range of ETFs that Australian investors have access to and how we can innovate and how we can provide solutions that they want to build into their portfolios. And for us, the fintech and blockchain space, it was a gap in the market that we felt an ETF was a solution that gave investors an ability to go, well, yes, I believe in this disruptive megatrend. I believe in this idea of blockchain and decentralized finance. I think the cashless economy is going to grow. I think we're going to see continued disruption in terms of point of sale systems or data vendors and trading platforms. For example, Robinhood is an example there. But how do I get exposure to it? Do I go direct? Do I buy an active manager that maybe has some exposure? Do I buy a broad index that maybe has some of those names? Well, there wasn't a solution that goes, well, this is just one ETF that gives you 75 of the biggest names in those in that thematic. And that's what we really wanted to bring out there. So that's why we launched the sort of the fintech and blockchain ETF, and FTEC is the code. So quite straightforward. It basically looks at this industry. And this industry is all about disruption. It's all about companies that are disrupting what is a very traditional, very potentially stale companies and industry. And you talk about some of the incumbent banks or, you know, wealth managers, and ETFs in itself are a disruptor in this space. You could call us we're maybe not a fintech anymore because we've been around for, you know, nearly 20 years, but, you know, ETFs a little while ago are considered a type of fintech, a disruptor to the wealth management space.
Yeah, it is such a disruptive part of the market at the moment. Some of the companies that are just stealing market share from the incumbents, you know, Afterpay created $30, $40 billion worth of value while the banks traded sideways in about 6 or 7 years. It's pretty phenomenal to see. And, you know, I think these passive ETFs give you a great opportunity to just be exposed to that disruption generally rather than trying to pick specific winners, because it can be tough in a space like this where there's just, you know, so much changing all the time. If we look under the hood in this ETF, what are some of the major holdings that investors will have access to?
So just to take a step back, so in terms of the index itself that we're tracking for this particular ETF, it's run by the guys at Index, INDXX, and it's the Index Developed Markets FinTech and DeFi Index. So essentially it gives you exposure to 75 companies from the developed markets, countries like Japan, the US, Australia, Europe. And within those 75 companies, it's broadly across 9 different sub-themes. And this is, I think, we sometimes forget, you know, we all know of Afterpay or Zip or Square or PayPal, but fintech as a thematic and blockchain in itself as a theme is broader than that. So some of those themes are companies like, and the themes are digital payments. So that's where Afterpay would feature. Point of sales, so that's where Square could feature in, for example, trading and capital markets. So if anyone knows about the market makers and things like that that run the ETF market, it's companies like Virtue or Flow Traders, and even potentially Robinhood could feature in this portfolio. And then when you look at things like blockchain, so or decentralized finance, so Coinbase is an example there. So you've got your traditional names such as Visa, PayPal, etc. Again, these are companies that Visa people may look and say, well, why Visa? Well, Visa's still disruptive. They're still working on that fintech space. We don't have a Commonwealth Bank in here. We don't have, you know, some of those traditional banks, you know, JP Morgan, etc. Yes, at some point could they feature in? Maybe. But this index also has a revenue purity screen. So when you look at these sub-themes, if the stock features as part of that sub-theme, it can only feature within the index if 50% of its revenue is associated to that theme. So if we think about, say, Afterpay, it currently is in the portfolio. So there's two Australian names in the portfolio, Xero and Afterpay. Both of those feature because Afterpay is 50% of its revenue is from that digital payments theme. That's probably, you could probably say 100% of its revenue is from that digital payments theme, but it features in that portfolio because it passes that revenue threshold. So it's more than just an off-the-shelf index, you know, because you can't find classifications for a lot of these companies. They're companies across sectors and across countries. And I think that's when you're looking at thematics, that's really important. You know, a thematic sometimes needs to be agnostic to sectors, agnostic to countries, which is what we've tried to do.
What subcategory does Xero fall under?
So Xero falls under the financial enterprise solutions sub-theme. And again, that when you think about fintech as well, the drivers of the fintech theme, people may say, well, isn't it done and dusted? This isn't financial services. You know, it's been around for hundreds of years, the ability to, you know, the idea of payments or whatever. But this particular area, it's growing and it will continue to grow because you're going to have, why are we seeing the drivers of growth? It's regulation. So the fact that you've got regulation on some of those traditional institutions, like the banks, unable to lend to certain consumers and businesses, created opportunity for buy now, pay later companies. You have high bureaucracy or layers within certain companies, traditional financial institutions that created inertia. And even some of these companies have come out and said, we saw an opportunity to do, you know, a point of sale systems like Square, but we never did it. And so therefore we're happy for Square to do something. And then this idea of technological adoption and innovation, so more cloud computing infrastructure, better software, better hardware, better data, all of that combined means that you have access and ability for companies like Xero to give you businesses an ability to basically just, you know, run their business, see in real time how their business is going versus the traditional way of using spreadsheets or whatever it may have been back in the day. And blockchain, you know, that is in itself probably the biggest theme within, you know, sub-theme within this thematic of fintech.
Kanish, I'd be surprised if anyone said that innovation in finance and payments was done. If that was actually something that you've heard, tell them to send us a DM because I'd love to have that debate with them. And I think there is nowhere where that is clearer than what blockchain has done in terms of, or what it is doing. And I think, you know, obviously a lot of the conversation around cryptocurrency centers around the price of crypto, but the underlying technology is really disrupting payments, cross-border, international trade. Like there's so much disruption happening. But I imagine some people have asked you why you would include blockchain in a fintech ETF. So why was it important to include some of these blockchain names in this ETF?
Well, it's important because for us, blockchain is probably the most impactful of the fintech themes. When we think about it, it's especially relevant from a financial services basis. You know, PwC did some research and they found that the finance industry, it's widely regarded as the most advanced in blockchain adoption. And so when you think about decentralized finance, that's blockchain. Everyone thinks that cryptocurrencies, it's Bitcoin, Ethereum, et cetera, and that's where everyone looks at. But as you mentioned, you know, that blockchain technology, that's what's going to be the real winner out of all of this, and that distributed ledger technology. It's not just only in the financial services space that blockchain technology is going to be relevant. Think about the idea of smart contracts. So this is where, for example, an agreement between companies or two parties are automatically executed by a blockchain without the need for lawyers. So you have this ability now to create innovation and disruption in the legal industry. And that in itself is a massive, you know, growth potential. And then you go beyond that. So I think this idea of blockchain, it's extremely important as a fintech thing. For that reason in particular, within this ETF, there's 75 names, and I mentioned those 9 sub-themes. The maximum number of stocks that any one theme can have is 10, but for the decentralized finance theme, it's 20. Now, as it stands, there's only 6 companies that are associated to that thematic, of decentralized finance. And as the industry of blockchain and as blockchain companies grow, as they list, as they pass those liquidity hurdles that we have, you know, the company has to have a minimum of 500 million market cap, US dollars. So we're not looking at small companies here. We're looking at big companies, but a company like Coinbase will be featured in this ETF, for example.
So Kanish, as I said at the top, there was an interesting fact about this ETF, and that is that it's listing on the Chi-X. We've just come off a great interview with Vic, who runs Chi-X, so our listeners would be very aware of the exchange now. Why decide to list this on the Chi-X?
The decision and the reason to list with Chi-X was as a way to, from our perspective, to support a secondary platform in Australia in terms of the exchange. They are growing in their presence and their footprint. I think, you know, I did listen to that interview and that podcast that you guys did with Vic, and I think he was saying that close to 90% of brokers now have access or use the Chi-X platform. It is the idea, and Chi-X in itself could be classified as a fintech in some way, you know, from an exchange perspective. That is something that we are considerate of, and, you know, we want to ensure that, you know, we support and listed this particular fund with them. I believe this will be the first passive ETF listed with Chi-X. It's a great mark, I think, in sort of the development of the Australian financial services industry and from an exchange perspective as well. In terms of access, I believe, as I said, I think they've got close to 90% of broker access. And for people that need to come across it, I think, you know, going onto the Chi-X website, I believe that should be able to help you out there.
It is fitting, Kanish, that you're listing a ETF that tracks fintech disruption on a company's exchange that is trying to disrupt an incumbent. It seems very fitting for this ETF. And I feel you're amongst good company there with Magellan also listing some of their products exclusively on Chi-X. So for most investors, it shouldn't affect how they access this ETF. Check with your broker and see if they have Chi-X. If they don't, maybe send them an email and ask them to include it. But Kanish, if people are interested in finding out more about this ETF, where should they go?
So the best place to go is on our website. It's etfsecurities.com.au. The product tab at the top there, if you click that, you'll see a list of all the funds that we have, that we offer, and the FTech product is listed there as well. And you'll find the product disclosure statement, you know, product flyers, investment cases, and other collateral and content on there in regards to the fund.
Well, Kanish, we love what you guys are doing at ETF Securities at the moment, providing plenty of access to innovative industries and industries that are exciting to be a part of as, you know, the young generation of investors come through. So, you know, congrats on the launch of FTech. We also had semiconductors as well. So for those listening at home and want to check it out, the exchange code is FTEC, FTech, or head to the website for more info. But Kanish, it's been a pleasure as always. We'll chat soon.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of Equity Mates. We love hearing from you. So drop us a line at contact@equitymates.com, or even better, go to your podcast player and leave a 5-star review. Also, a reminder that the Equity Mates content train doesn't stop when you've run out of episodes to binge. We've got a brand new website, a Facebook discussion group. We're on Instagram, YouTube, and slowly making our way as an influencer on TikTok. Well, that's Ren. So come and say hello and join the community. We'd love to welcome you. Until next time.
Equity Mates Investing Podcast is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. Equity Mates gives listeners access to information and educational content provided by a range of financial service professionals. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Equity Mates Media does not operate under an Australian financial services license and relies on the exemption available under the Corporations Act 2001 in respect of any information or advice given. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast or video. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website, where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.